Welcome to Research for Everyone, the short podcast series sharing health research in an accessible way. Created by people with learning disabilities, researchers at the University of Glasgow, and three advocacy organisations, PAMIS, People First Scotland, and Down Syndrome Scotland. In this episode, Michael McEwan talks to Dr. John McLean about a recent study by researchers at the University of Glasgow, which looked at the links between professional footballers and brain diseases like dementia.
Hi, my name's Michael. I am a journalist and a disability advocate. On this podcast, we're going to speak to Dr. John McLean, the chief executive of the Hampden Sports Clinic and a key member of the research team behind the study. Welcome, John, and thanks for taking the time out to speak to us.
Afternoon, Michael. Lovely to be here and be part of the podcast.
First of all, John, can you please tell us who you are and what do you do?
I'm a sport and exercise medicine doctor. I've been doing this for 40 years, for a long time, almost all my career. And basically, I've been looking after sportsmen and sportswomen over that period of time. I work with the Scottish Football Association and was the Scottish National Football Team doctor for 25 years. I work in the clinic at Hampden, where we have physios, massage therapists, health and fitness testing, lots of facilities to help not just athletes, but people who are active, keep fit and healthy. And the university connection is that I run courses in sport and exercise medicine at Glasgow University. And as you mentioned, I'm part of the field research group that was the first to look at this link between dementia and being an ex-professional footballer.
Can you tell us about the study then?
This came about 3 years ago when many of us that have been fortunate enough to work in sport understood that there were lots of former footballers who had retired now and were in their 50s and 60s and 70s who had dementia. And people were asking a question about whether there could be a link with playing football and then a diagnosis of dementia in later life. So what we did is we set out to try and see if there was a link between playing professional football and developing some of these brain diseases. So they've got a fancy name called neurodegenerative disease, when the brain is not working as well as it would in the past. So when you're young and fit and healthy, your memory is very good. All of these things, as we get older, naturally become poorer. But unfortunately, some of us will develop dementia where we'll have problems with memory and with concentration. So what we did, Michael, is we had a huge set of information of individuals who played professional football in Scotland, about 20,000 lines of data on a huge big data sheet. And we're very lucky in Scotland that we've got an excellent health record system. And what we did was for every professional footballer that was in the study, we had three individuals who were born on the same day. They were all males and they lived in the same part of the country as these footballers. And that allowed us to compare the number of players who had dementia and compare that to the number of people in the general public. What we found was that the footballers had three times the risk of developing dementia-type diseases compared to the general population. But also, we found that depending on how long you played football, so the longer you played, the bigger chance you had of developing dementia. And we also found that different playing positions had an increased risk. So for example, goalkeepers had exactly the same risk of dementia as the general public, but defenders and forwards had 3 to 5 times the risk of developing dementia. What we were then able to say is that if you played for longer or you were a defender or a forward, two things were more likely to happen. One is that you would head the ball more often, because as we know, watching football, defenders and forwards tend to head more often than midfield players and certainly more often than goalkeepers. And the second thing we found was that not just playing position, but the length of time you played. So it's not just about heading the ball, because these guys who play defender or forward are more likely to get a head injury. So they're more likely to have a clash of heads when they go up for a heading challenge than, for example, goalkeepers would be. So at the end of the study, we could say that the risk was three times higher for those football players. But what we couldn't say for certain was whether it was heading the ball or getting a head injury, or most likely a combination of the two things.
What was the problem you were trying to solve?
If we know that these players have got a higher incidence of dementia, what we can then look to do is to try and see if we can lower that risk for players now. So unfortunately, we can't do anything for the players who've developed dementia, but the players in their 20s and 30s now, or even younger players, can we change the laws of football, or can we change what we do about head injury management or heading in order to prevent this from happening for guys of your age, a young generation, who are then going to develop those diseases when they're in their 50s and 60s and 70s.
Why was it important to do this study then, John?
So I think for two reasons, Michael. One is that people have been talking about the risk to footballers for many years, but we've never really had the scientific evidence to prove it one way or other. And the second was trying to find the science which would give us an answer as to whether this was going to be a problem. And unfortunately, it has proven to be a problem.
What did you learn from the study?
So we learned that those people who played professional football had a higher risk if they played for a long time, so for 15 years or longer. We found that if you were a defender or a forward, you had a greater risk of dementia. But the other side of the study, and this is something that I think is really interesting, it's that while we were looking specifically at dementia, what we were able to do was to look at a lot of other health outcomes. So for example, we were able to look at how often these individuals had heart disease, so had a heart attack, how often they developed lung cancer, how often they had mental health problems. And we found, and it was really exciting for us, that the professional footballers had less heart attacks, less lung cancer, and less mental health problems than those that didn't play football. Now, we know that being active is really important for our health, both our physical health and our mental health. And there's been lots of studies that have shown that being active reduces your risk of serious diseases like heart disease, diabetes, etc. So our study was the first one done in footballers that showed that, yes, they had a bigger incidence of dementia, but they had a much lower incidence of some of these other serious diseases. So there were lots of benefits of playing football and lots of benefits of being active. So for guys like you out there and your generation, it's really important we encourage you all to be as active as you can be. And that doesn't always mean exercising. It doesn't always mean jogging in the street or playing organized football. It just means being more active, walking more than jumping in the bus or the taxi. If you're going to the shops, walking there, trying at the weekend to get out for a long walk. If you're lucky like me to have a dog, I spend a couple of hours every Saturday and Sunday taking the lovely Brody out on a walk. And that's really good for my health, not just to keep me fit, but also to help clear my mind away from everything that's been going on during the week at work. So it helps me keep good mental health as well.
This episode is part of the Research for Everyone project, which aims to make complex health research accessible to wider audiences. The team have also created two short animations and two infographics to share health information in ways that people with diverse communication needs and the wider public can enjoy and understand.
In football, there's a common move called a header. But if a player heads the ball every day for years, what happens to their brain?
When someone has cancer, doctors and nurses work hard to treat them. They might give them chemotherapy or surgery to get rid of the cancer, or medication to help with the symptoms. But being told you have cancer is scary.
You can find the full animations at the Scottish Learning Disabilities Observatory website, sldo.ac.uk, and click on Inclusive Research.
John, what does this mean for people that play football?
what in a sense you're asking is it a worry for young people who are starting off playing football for them that they might develop this brain disease, dementia? And I think we've got to be honest and say, yes, the study shows that you're more likely to. So therefore, what we have to do is we have to look at the two things I mentioned before about heading the ball and head injury. And what we have to try and do is reduce the number of times that young people head the ball, both in training and playing. And also we need to be better at preventing and looking after people who have head injuries. If we start off with heading, what we've done in Scotland, and again, we were the second country in the world to put in place some guidelines over heading in football. The United States were the first, and England and Scotland got together a couple of years ago and we brought into place some guidelines for young people to head the ball. So what we've said was that while we're playing football in matches, it's quite difficult to reduce the times people head the ball. What we can do is in training, we can dramatically reduce the number of times people head the ball. So what we've said is if you're at primary school, so if you're under 12, there should be no heading practice at all for those boys and girls under 12 during training. And then when you're over 12, up until you're 18, we should limit the number of times that you head the ball in training to try and reduce what we call heading burden. So that's the overall number of times that people head the ball in a week or a month or in a year. And at the same time, what we should be trying to do is to teach people how to head the ball properly. So again, we're reducing the risk. So what we've done in Scotland is for young people and also now for adults, is we've tried to reduce the number of headers. So in professional football, we ask that they don't head the ball the day before or the day after they play a match. So if you play on a Saturday, we say no heading training on Friday, Saturday or Sunday. And that means that we allow the brain to rest and recover after we play a game. So we're not heading during the game on Saturday and then heading again on Sunday, again on Monday, again on Tuesday. So we've tried to reduce the number of times people are heading the ball. The second part of that is head injury. And in Scotland, again, we are one of the leaders in the world about managing head injuries in sport or concussion. You'll have heard that term when someone gets a head injury. And after that, they maybe feel dizzy or lightheaded or sick, or they get a headache and they just don't feel right. They sometimes just feel generally a bit funny, as if they're in a kind of foggy atmosphere. And Scotland, we're really pleased to say, we're the first country in the world to produce some recommendations for young people and adults about how to manage concussion. And we did that in Scotland across all sports. So not just football or not just rugby, but all sports in Scotland got together and brought out some really sensible guidelines about how to manage concussion. And the most important bit of that was to allow a proper length of time before these people go back to playing football or rugby, to allow the brain to rest and then to allow the brain to recover. And the last bit is when we're recovering, it's a bit like when you have an injury. So if you tear your hamstring when you're playing football, your recovery will start off with you just doing maybe some walking, and then you'll end up doing some light jogging, and then you'll end up doing some sprinting and fast running, and then you'll end up back playing football. So what we've put in these guidelines is exactly the same for concussion and head injury, where you rest, then you start to walk, then you maybe do some jogging, then you maybe do some light training, and then you return to contact training, so proper training before you go back to matches. And what we recommend now for young people is that it's just over 3 weeks if you're under 19 before you go back to playing sport after you've had a bad head injury. So if we go back to the very start, Michael, and say, if we can look after people who injure their head better, if we can reduce the number of times they're heading the ball, then both of these things, we hope in the future, will reduce the amount of brain damage and diseases like dementia.
You've now done the study, Sean. What would you like to see happens next to the study?
Two things again, Michael. First is that we've put in place these guidelines and these concussion guidelines really just before and since the study came out. So one of the good things about the study was it encouraged people in sport to start thinking about reducing the risk for people that play sport. football and rugby, any contact sport. It could be judo, it could be anything where head injury is possible. So we put these things in place, which is good. The other thing that we're doing is we haven't just stopped the study, we've carried the study on. So that means in 5 years' time or 10 years' time, we'll be able to say whether that risk is getting higher, we hope not, staying the same, or getting reduced. So the things that we're doing now, can we then use that to monitor if people are getting dementia less that play football? But one problem is that mostly people don't get dementia until they're in their 50s. So therefore, it takes quite a long time from someone like you, who I'm guessing is in his 20s, it might take 30 years before you develop dementia. So this is one of the difficulties in doing this, that it takes quite a long time to see if the things we do now are going to work and be effective. But it's really important we do them, and then we'll find out in the future if we've managed to reduce this in the number of people that get dementia that played professional football.
That's nice, John, that you said I was in my 20s, but I'm not going to tell you how old that I am. Just one more question, John, if I may. What would you like to see happen next? Would you like it to go on to schools and teach younger people about football and the issues that you face when you get older?
Absolutely. So funnily enough, we've just had a project in Hampden with our colleagues who work with football memories. So with those players who have dementia, and we've brought some primary school children into Hampden and we've spoken to them about head injury and concussion and the importance of not going straight back to play. But the other thing is that we know that there are about 10 different things that make it more likely that we'll have dementia. Now, heading the ball and head injury is only one of them, Michael. So the other things, for example, are having a healthy diet, not smoking cigarettes, not vaping, not drinking alcohol to excess, being generally active, as we mentioned before, and trying to eat a healthy diet. So basically trying to live a healthy lifestyle of good diet, not smoking alcohol, and being active. Now, we know that not just by changing head injury or heading, if young people adopt that healthy lifestyle, then their risk of developing dementia is much less. And also, it's not just dementia, it's heart disease, it's stroke, it's cancers, the same as we found in the football group. So even if young people are never going to be a professional footballer, you know, I was young once, I wanted to be a professional footballer, but I wasn't good enough. I became a doctor, and therefore I tried to adopt a healthy lifestyle to try and reduce my risk when I got to 50, 60, and eventually 70 of having any of these really common diseases. And young people will look at their parents and their grandparents, and they'll see that perhaps some of them smoked a bit too much and weren't very active and didn't have a healthy diet. And they will see that some of them, unfortunately, will have developed diabetes or heart disease. And I think our study showed, along with the other studies in dementia, that by living a healthy, active lifestyle, you can live to be a good age and be fit as long as you're living and not get as many of these diseases that we associate with being older.
Okay, that's brilliant. Thanks, John, for taking the time out to speak about the dementia in football, because it is a very important subject. So thanks, John.
And Michael, can I just finish by saying thank you to you and your team for putting together these brilliant infographics that are really, really helpful. And I'm happy to do anything I can in football about trying to publicise these and get them out to football clubs. So hopefully we can work together in the future to try and help young people as best we can keep fit and healthy and enjoy a happy life as long as possible.
Okay, thanks, John.
If you'd like to find out more about this important research and the Research for Everyone project, please visit the Inclusive Research page at sldo.ac.uk. Research for Everyone was presented by Michael McEwan, produced by Fresh Air Studios. Research for Everyone is a project funded by the University of Glasgow. Please rate and review to let other people know about this podcast.